We are delighted to say that we've once again been selected by the Big Give for this year's Green Match Fund, which means every donation we receive will be doubled. This time around, we're raising funds for our science and research work, and we're hoping to raise £10,000, and the Big Give would match each donation made. Donations must be received via the Big Give website, which will go live on the 18th of April and will remain open for 1 week only until the 25th of April. Every donation will make a difference. We've put a link to the donation page in the show notes.
This week, we're dropping in on the 2019 Wales Bat Workers Weekend, which took place in May, and I spoke to four people over the course of the weekend. Training and Conferences Manager Naomi Webster gave us an insight into what happens at a Bat Conservation Trust event.
Naomi, we're here at the Wales Bat Workers Weekend. What sort of effort goes into organising one of these weekends?
I like to think that the impression I give is the swan that we glide smoothly along as far as all the delegates are concerned. Underneath, the team and I are often paddling rather frantically. I'm very fortunate that I do get to say the team, because while I'm the only official conferences person, everyone at BCT will pull together and help me actually put this together. So here in Wales, it's been great because Steve, as our Wales Bat Officer, has taken the lead on the programme, so he's pulled together all of the great talks and the workshops and everything that everyone's been doing. We had a lot of support from Sam Dyer from Natural Resources Wales to help with the amazing field work that's going on, and so the murmur in the background is everyone now analysing their data, all the calls and things that they got from the field work that they did last night, which is always great fun. And that's one of my favourite bits, actually. It's seeing all the people come together. They've all got this shared passion for bats, and actually seeing them, they may not have worked together before, but all this networking, sharing skills, supporting one another, and of course, supporting the bats.
How many people have we got here this weekend?
So this weekend we've got 72, 73 here, which is a really nice number, because I think it's meant that people can get together. It is one of our smaller events, and because it's a weekend event, it can often be harder for people to get away for a whole weekend. It's been lovely being up here in Wrexham, actually. We've been quite lucky with the weather, although it was a bit cold for the fieldwork last night, but we've had some lovely sunshine outside, although we've been dragging people into dark lecture theatres to educate them. But no, it's been a lovely atmosphere, really, really friendly. And that's one of the things, every event is, I love how friendly the bat workers are.
What are the positive comments that you get back from people after one of these sort of events?
Well, I mean, we're very fortunate. People give us all sorts of feedback, often very constructive, because we're not perfect, we can always learn. But the things that do come up again and again are people do really appreciate the time that the team put into developing the programme, and we're very fortunate that we can get some really great speakers, and we get a real mix of speakers. So we will have academics who are often talking about some of their cutting-edge science. It might not even have been published yet, so it's always really exciting to have some of that unpublished data and new trends and things that are being found, but we'll also have the bat groups telling us about the exciting things that they're doing. And of course, so much of the bat conservation is reliant on the citizen science that's going on all across the country, but we'll also sometimes have international speakers coming in to help us. So I'm really looking forward to at the National Bat Conference, we've got Professor Emma Teeling coming as our keynote speaker, coming over from Ireland, so that should be really exciting. I think there's a lot of people very keen to hear what she's got to say, so we're looking forward to that. But it's a real diverse mix, and of course we've got a lot of ecologists here as well, and so for them to be able to share their best practice and their experiences, and as new guidance and things come out. So we were lucky, we had Harry Fox here from Clarkson and Woods talking about the new lighting guidance, which of course is really useful for everyone to get that more insight into such a topical area.
And you mentioned the effort that goes into one of these. How long does it take to organise a conference or a weekend like this?
Usually longer than I'm hoping for, just because, you know, we really do want to make sure that it goes as smoothly as possible, and just trying to anticipate all of the little needs, plan, you know, all of the rooms, all the details with the venues. So in practical terms, we've got a pre-venue visit to make sure we've got the space that we want, and so that will usually take a day, just to get up and back from the venue, having researched the options as well. We've then got the practical logistics of actually sorting out all the bookings and getting them in. And some people are amazing and get their booking right first time, and some people need a little bit more help. But we do want to make sure that everyone gets here on time. There's the liaison in advance of the bookings. We want to make sure that everyone's got all the information they need so they can turn up at the right time, at the right place, with all the right kit that they're going to need. And then there's always the last minute tweaks and flexibility that we need, so particularly supporting our exhibitors as they come to share their wares and their technologies and things, and making sure that they've got all the things that they need. Power is often one of the key things, making sure I can get power to all of our exhibition stands and things. So it is trying to think of all of these little elements to try and bring it all together on the day so that hopefully everyone has a really good time.
And finally, for somebody who's never been to a BCT event before, what would you say to encourage them to get along to one of these?
I think the best thing is just hanging out with other people who are so passionate about bats. In any field, it can feel a bit isolated sometimes, that you are just the only person battling along in your little corner. But coming together with other people who are often facing similar challenges, or, you know, actually might even have solutions for problems that you're facing, but also to just be reinvigorated, to hear about the really exciting projects that are being done, and hopefully to make some new friends. As I said earlier, bat workers are really friendly. You know you're coming to somewhere where you've automatically got something in common with people, because basically everyone here thinks bats are great. So if you like bats, you should really be here.
What three words would you use to describe the bat conservation movement?
I think I would say exciting, because a lot of it is cutting edge. There's new stuff being discovered all the time. Inspiring, how committed and how passionate people are, giving up so much of their free time. So I think those are exciting, inspiring, and needed, you know, bats and all biodiversity, and, you know, the knock-on effects from bat conservation in terms of benefiting other biodiversity as well. I think it's needed. So I think those are my three: exciting, inspiring, and needed.
Naomi, thank you very much.
If that's inspired you to get along to the next bat conference, just head to bats.org.uk and hit the events and training button on the top menu, or hit the link in the show notes below. The Bat Conservation Trust's Wales officer and species legislation and policy specialist, Steve Lucas, had been busy in the run-up to the conference, and my first question to Steve was, what's the weekend for?
Well, the weekend brings... It's primarily an event for the bat workers, bat volunteers in Wales, although we do attract, thankfully and very nicely, people from England as well. We're all part of the same community after all. And it's a way of bringing them together, bringing the community together, so that we can exchange ideas, we can impart new information, and have a generally nice time.
Your biography on the BCT website says you grew up in Africa.
I did indeed.
How come you're out there?
How come? Well, my father was working for the Uganda Development Corporation, getting Uganda ready for independence. So I was born out there along with my two brothers and sister, and came back to the UK in the summer of 61.
And have you always been in Wales, or did you come back to elsewhere?
No, we started off in Surrey, basically, and I lived all my life, sort of youth, really, in Surrey or Guildford, and then joined the army when I was 18. And it wasn't until, 1980, something like that, that I moved to Wales.
How long have you been living in Wales?
It's about 35 years now, so it's probably the longest time I've set root in any one place in my life.
Excellent. What was it about bats that drew you to come and work for BCT? How long ago did you join the team?
So I joined just over 10 years ago. It'll be 11 years this July. I've been working in nature conservation since 1990, and most of that was sort of doing protected species. So I spent initial time working in the Wildlife Trust. Then I went to the Countryside Council for Wales, as it was then. I did 2 years secondment in Welsh Government, overseeing species licensing, and then came back into CCW as a protected species officer. So it was just a natural progression, really, to go into bats.
And you're the Bat Conservation Trust's Welsh Bat Officer. What does your job entail?
So effectively, front up BCT in Wales. So I cover everything to a certain extent. A lot of bat group support, because that's where the basis of BCT is as a conservation movement. But there's also a lot of advocacy and policy work, working with Welsh Government and other bodies like Natural Resources Wales.
I was going to say, part of your job title is also you're the Species Legislation and Policy Specialist. For the listeners at home, what do you do as part of that role?
So it is absolutely vitally important to get the policy and the legislation correct. If you don't get that right at the beginning, you're kind of wasting your time in many respects. You're sort of battling against the wind. So I've been doing, I now work 2 days a week as a kind of a pseudo UK level, principally England and Wales, dealing with policy and legislation. And that means talking with government officials, working incredibly closely with other NGOs. So we have Wildlife and Countryside Link for England, we have Wales Environment Link in Wales, and it's working collaboratively to make sure we get shared messages across, and the greater benefit is in the collective.
Yeah. I'm guessing Brexit's now playing a big part of that role. I mean, we're recording this in May, so the...
Oh, who knows?
So the extension is currently the 31st of October.
Yes.
What do you think the future of BAT legislation looks like in the light of Brexit?
It's really difficult to sort of think about what's going to happen if Brexit happens. I mean, that's the big issue, yeah. I think, now. If it does, and we're obviously working towards that, it will happen. The legislation as it currently stands, as it's been all transposed from the European directives into UK, into EU legislation, will be brought across into the UK, and broadly speaking, it's going to replicate what we've got. Unfortunately, what we will then leave are all the principles and the governance watchdogs behind, and that's where we're having a lot of our focus of work is making sure that government understands that and puts in place new structures to make sure that we can challenge governments and we keep those principles, which are so vitally important.
So potentially big challenges ahead there.
I think there are huge challenges ahead. I mean, as I say, the legislation is in place, ready to, so that on exit day, the law will still be the same, but it's what's going to come afterwards. And I suspect that there will be perhaps reinterpretations of the law, and there will be some certain individuals who will be seeking to change it completely.
Yeah. What would you say are the unique challenges about being a BAT worker in Wales as opposed to the rest of the UK?
I don't know that there is a specific unique challenge for BAT workers in Wales. Obviously, the vast... Wales has a population of about 3 million people, and most of those are centred around the sort of Wrexham, where we are here, Bangor across North Wales, and then along the M4 corridor in the south. So we have a massive chunk of Wales right in the middle, which has a very sparse population, and therefore there are fewer people to cover a bigger area. So I think that's probably the biggest issue, and particularly when we come to things like back care and rehabilitation and sort of members of the public phoning up. You know, some people may have to travel long distances to go and meet people and collect bats and so on. So that's probably the biggest challenge that we have.
Where do you see the future of Welsh bat conservation going?
If I was to say, I think that the Welsh Government really do have good ideas about the environment, of course, that has to play against other things. I suspect that bat conservation in Wales will be pretty good, but it comes down to policy and politics at the end of the day. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But it's, you know, the indications are rosy, are okay.
And why are these weekends important for Welsh bat conservation?
Oh, it's just bringing people together, which is great. I mean, it's a great networking opportunity. And our weekends in particular, where we do field work, where else do you get 50 people, 80 people all out together surveying? The financial contribution of that must be huge. And so people do have a great time when they come here. It's very laid back and we just get on with it.
Something we're doing on the podcast is asking people which three words they would use to describe the bat conservation movement.
I always take great inspiration when I come away from these events. You get people come together and you think, yep, we're all working together. And it's inspiring that you have so many people who volunteer their time, not just to come to these events, but in their day-to-day work with bat conservation. And that, for me, is really great. And without that, I think we would be much, much poorer. That gives me hope for the future, so as long as everything else pans out. And it just gives me great enjoyment, to be honest.
Now, lots of you have seen me in branded t-shirts and hoodies with the Batchat logo on, and you've all been asking me when they'll be available. Well, we're thrilled to let you know that a whole range of Batchat clothing and tote bags is now available for you on our T-Mill store. The link's in the show notes. Whether you're a long-time supporter or a new member of the Batchat family, we can't wait for you to share your photos of you wearing our merch on social media. Be sure to tag the Bat Conservation Trust in your posts. If you're listening to Batchat on Google Podcasts, we wanted to let you know that Google have announced they plan to discontinue their app later this year. So we recommend making the switch to an alternative podcast app, and we've put some links in the show notes to alternative apps that you can follow Batchat on so that you don't miss any future episodes. Now, last time on Batchat, we spoke to Dan Hargreaves about the National Enthusiast Pipistrelle Project, and whilst I was over in Wales, I managed to grab a few minutes with Denise Foster from Carmarthenshire Bat Group, who's leading the Welsh contingent of the Enthusiast Project, which started earlier this year. Denise, you're heading of the Welsh branch of the Enthusiast Pipistrelle Project. Why is this the year that Wales is getting involved in that project?
Well, there's been a national pipistrelle project run by Daniel Hargreaves and the BCT since 2014. Wales wasn't included in that project, and we had a talk by Daniel at the Welsh Bat Workers Day last year where he was trying to push for the Welsh involvement. We have maternity colonies, a number of them in Northern Ireland, and so it's going to be interesting to see if that population are actually sort of migrating across to, particularly to North Wales, and also going back again. So yeah, I think it's quite important to see if we have any movement with those pipistrelles from that particular colony. We also have a number of records down in the south, Cardiff way, so they're obviously travelling along the sort of the estuary in that area. So again, it will be interesting to see if we can actually see their movements on the coastline, and you know, see where they're migrating from.
Okay. And last night we all went out. It was about seven different sites we had.
Yes.
Was it? I mean, it was a training session for the Welsh bat groups. How many bat workers did we have out last night?
Oh, I think we must have had we had seven teams. There was at least five per team, I believe. And we went to a number of water bodies. It was a little bit on the cold side, but the weather conditions were quite good. Other than that, there were bats flying. I think most groups, as far as I know, caught mainly soprano and common pipistrelles.
Yeah.
No enthusiasts were caught last night, as far as I know. But it's early days. We've only just started the project.
And what's made you want to lead the project?
Well, I've only just moved into Wales from Herefordshire, where I was leading a number of projects. I like to get involved. I've worked with Daniel Hargreaves for many years and been on various of his projects. And I thought, you know, I wanted a project to start in Wales, and I thought that, you know, working with Daniel, the BCT, it couldn't be better.
And how many bat groups have you got taking part in the project once it starts running this year?
Well, we've got seven accredited agents on the licence so far, two in the north and five in the south. Some of these agents actually belong to a number of bat groups, so I think we're probably, it covers around about five bat groups so far.
What do we know about Enthusiast Pipistrelles in Wales at the moment from existing records?
Well, we've got about over 200 records so far. Some of them date back quite a long time. I don't think, as far as I'm aware, that we've only caught a few down in the Cardiff area. So that's all we really know about them, and none of those bats were ringed. So we're mainly, whenever we catch these bats, it's mainly the males. So, you know, the target is to try and get females, juveniles, and then eventually is to radio track these bats until we can find some roosts. But that's a long way, you know, down the road. We need to find the sites first, and then we'll target the trapping and the radio tagging.
Okay. And what do you hope to discover during the project, sort of what are its aims?
I would like to find at least a couple of maternity colonies, particularly in the north, and I would like to see if there's a link between Northern Ireland and Wales, because it's not that far.
No, it's not.
So that's what I would like to see. And maybe in South Wales, Blagdon Lake is a hot spot for enthusiasts, not that far away. So let's see if those sites could be linked up.
And how long are you envisaging the project running for into the future?
Well, the licence is currently for 2 years. I would say, you know, at least 5 years until we're either catching lots of them or we're not catching any of them. Well, you know, it will be run alongside the national project, so whatever they decide, we'll follow their protocols.
And something we're asking everyone is three words to describe the bat conservation movement. Which three words would you choose?
The three words, an enthusiast project, or particularly the bat itself, would be nomadic, elusive, and maybe cosmopolitan.
Great stuff. Denise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And finally, I sat down with Jean Matthews, who's a fellow trustee at BCT and has been living in Wales for around 30 years and also sits on the Natural England Bat Expert Panel. I spoke to Jean about what it's like to be a bat worker in Wales.
Jean, how did you get into bats? Did it start as a hobby or a career?
It started as a hobby, very much, that I wanted to do something that was nothing to do with the work that I was doing. And I joined the Avon Bat Group when I was living down there and met Gareth Jones, who was a student, and he had a couple of noctual bats, and I went to a talk where these noctual bats were the captive noctual bats, and I met one of those and I was just completely captivated by it.
And how long have you been living over here in Wales?
I moved up here about 30 years ago, so that's when I joined the Gwynedd Bat Group and started training for my bat licence. And then I was lucky enough to get a job within a fairly short time as a seasonal species officer with the Nature Conservancy Council.
And what is it about bats that you love so much?
I love all sorts of wildlife and animals and mammals particularly. And I think bats are just fascinating because it's very difficult to know much about them. They come out in the dark when it's too difficult to see them. And we have lots of different species, 17 different species, 18 different species with different lifestyles and different ecologies. But they're very cryptic.
And can you just tell us a bit about your career in bats? Mm.
Well, I started as a regional species officer in North Wales and covering all protected species, but with a focus on bats. And then gradually I moved into a headquarters role looking at bats over the whole of Wales and also working with other bat organisations like BCT and across the UK. And also I was lucky enough to join the Eurobats Advisory Committee, so I've been extremely lucky to do local bat work, Wales, England and Wales, Scotland and the UK and European as well.
And you've worked for quite a large part of your career at NRW and CCW before that. What was your biggest achievement whilst working there?
I'm not sure about achievement, but the thing I enjoyed doing most, I think, and think is one of the most valuable things, was making sure that the Lesser Horseshoe Bat Monitoring Programme has kept going. It's a long-term monitoring set that started in 1993, and it's got a long run of data, and it's probably the best recorded bat species in the UK. We've got the best data on those. It was a challenge sometimes to try and keep the funding going, because people think you've done it once, you've counted them once, you don't need to count them again, but the value of a long-term data set is in the length of time. So.
And what have you seen change over the time you've been involved in bat conservation?
A lot of things have changed, really. When I first started, there were a lot of volunteer bat workers helping out doing roost visits and helping householders, and the development sector was not very large, and that's changed completely. So there's a lot more professional bat workers, some of whom are volunteers as well, but it is definitely a changed environment, really.
And you sit on Natural England's bat panel. Can you just tell us a bit more about that role and what the panel's working on at the moment?
Yeah, the panel is trying to streamline the development licensing process, really, to make sure that things that are done are proportional and are more effective in delivering bat conservation without focusing on things that are not really going to make that much difference.
And both of us sit on the Board of Trustees for BCT. What made you want to join the board?
I've worked with BCT in a number of roles, you know, with in my role in NRW, helping to get grants for BCT, and also sat on the Bat Groups Forum years ago. And I just really wanted to continue my involvement when I stopped working with NRW, so it was a good opportunity to do that.
And which bat group are you involved with at the moment, and what projects does it have on the go?
I'm with the Gwyneth Bat Group, and our main focus this year, we're looking at the Nethusius project, which is the Wales-wide project that we've been working on this weekend. So we're looking at water bodies where we might find Nethusius pipistrelle. It's more common over in Ireland, and it migrates across from Europe, and we in Wales could be a stopping off point for the species, or we may have residents, we really don't know.
And how many members does Gwyneth Bat Group have at the moment?
I think we have about 80 members, but with a sort of core of about 10 to 15 who are active members.
And in terms of the people who are active, what sort of projects are they involved with? As well as the Methuselah stuff, are they doing roost visits, or are they going out doing transit work or stuff like
There's
that?
There's a small number of doing roost visits. A lot of that work is done in Wales, in our area, by NRW, so we don't do quite as much of that. But we do a lot of bat walks, and so if we've got time to organise it, we do something called a bat camp, where we descend on usually a country estate for a weekend and do lots of different survey methods. So it's partly training, but partly getting information on the bats in the area.
Okay. And what have you seen change in the time that you've been involved in bat conservation?
I think, as I said before, there are a lot more professional bat workers, and it's an industry now, which it didn't used to be. There's a lot more research going on. There's, a lot of PhDs in bats and incredibly interesting information coming out. But we still, every time you learn something new, you realise there's an awful lot more we don't know. And I think the other thing as well is just to say that, the words change. Biodiversity conservation. We started off with conservation. It became biodiversity ecosystems. But it's still the same thing, really. We still need to carry on doing it.
And finally, which three words would you use to describe the bat conservation movement?
I'd say, firstly, essential, because we really need to keep looking and focusing on our bats and making sure that they're safe in the long term. And urgent, I guess, because they're species that don't breed quickly, can't replace their numbers quickly if anything happens to them, so we can't really take our eye off the ball. And enjoyable is the last one, because you get to meet some nice people and some nice bats and go out and play in some interesting places.
And why are these weekends so important for bat workers, both in Wales and in the UK?
It's a great chance to get out and meet bat workers. It can be quite a lonely time being a bat worker if you're just sitting outside a building hoping some bats will come out, and you might be on your own. And you get to learn things from other bat workers and look at different species than the ones you get in your own area, different habitats. It's fun as well.
Great stuff. Jean Matthews, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode, and indeed for 2019. We're going to be taking a short break over the Christmas period, but we will be back on Wednesday the 8th of January with the first of a two-part special at the Natural History Museum. Here's a little clip.
This is South Kensington.
I knew that there was a colleague of mine from Thailand coming to visit, and he was particularly interested in rhinolophids in general. We had a look at one of the species that was there, and then he noticed that particular specimen was quite different from the rest. He said, oh, maybe this is a new species. So what do we need to do in order to verify this?
So museums have to change. Science is changing, conservation is changing, and museums very much have to keep up with that. I mean, the reason we built the Darwin Centre 10 years ago was to have better facilities for collection storage, but part of that is around storage of genetic material as well. And that is very much how the museum is going forward.
Don't forget to subscribe to Bat Chat, and that means the first episode of that two-part special will automatically arrive on your smart device in January. Until then, the Bat Conservation Trust wishes you all a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year. Thank you to Wildcare and Wildlife Acoustics for sponsoring the Bat Chat podcast.
Can you hear that?
We can. Wildlife Acoustics creates the world's leading bat acoustic monitoring tools, designed to help scientists make impactful discoveries for our biologically diverse planet, turning this into this. Visit wildlifeacoustics.com to learn more.
Wildcare are committed to supporting the ecology industry and are specialists in supplying a large range of monitoring, conservation and habitat management products, as well as equipment hire and service and repair. With a large range of products coupled with friendly and expert help and advice, Wildcare is a favourite supplier for ecologists nationwide.
Go to wildcare.co.uk to see the full range and quote BatChat at the checkout for 10% off all bat detectors and bat boxes.